the McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4 for 4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for 4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4 for 4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for 4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Delicious Recipe with the Dell. You're on UPRN Radio. All through the ether. Great to be back again there. We were back there last week, and we're still in the process of a move going on here. So still the sort of the setup, I'm sort of stuck here. I'm down in the basement, down on the bottom. So if you hear that little noise in the background, that's just the furnace going, which is sort of good that it is going because it is wintertime up here in Canada. So hopefully there in the next little while, I'll get everything all straightened out and find everything that we had there during the packing and unpacking. So we're still in a little bit of a flux here right now. And if I sound a little bit stuffed up, we just got the cats there back. I'm allergic to them, but Laura there, she loves them. So have to deal with them. So up a little bit there last night, they're stuffed up, but whether it's allergies or a cold, but we'll muscle through it there. And if I'm looking around for stuff, if you're watching me here on video, it's just me looking at my pages here and trying to find light that I can read them. So if I'm looking down or looking away, that's just trying to make things work for the setup that I have going on here right now. Anyways, getting back to this, and enough about my problems, and there's the furnace. let's have some fun again there tonight, and let's see what we can cook up in this pot of a delicious recipe and throw what ingredients we can in there. So title of this show there tonight, I believe they called it Global Apple Squares. And apple, let's see, that's been used in history quite a bit through different things. You've got it back to the Garden of Eden when the snake tempted Eve there to go and eat from the tree of knowledge, the golden apple, or on Supernatural, if you watch that show there, they called it a quince, but same sort of type of fruit. And another stories and that we've had the apple there, and I believe it was a Sleeping Beauty where the apple had an effect that the witch wanted. And apple has sort of been used for various things, and through even the apple of my eye, just the apple in general. So that's why I put the apple in there, because it's sort of always a part there that it's giving something that somebody needs, and it might not always be the desired effect of what you have going on with it. And so I was going to call this the philanthropy global apple squares, and to get in with the part about philanthropy, and I'll tell you what philanthropy is anyways. If I'll give you the definition here. Philanthropy, the desire to promote the welfare of others, expressed especially by the generous donation of money to good causes and or to a good or to people in there. So I was looking up through the various YouTubes there, and I found this one video. They guess that it was from 2015, and they had the top 10 philanthropists I guess they were rated around the world. And philanthropy, well, to me, there anyways, is giving of your own wealth to someone or to a cause or to a purpose, just like sort of the saying goes there. But I guess it, in a way, I've sort of looked at this when you're generating wealth that's as of a company, I don't see that as being individual philanthropy. So this is why I sort of find this one a little bit weird when they gave this list. But all of the big people that are on this list are billionaires or with immense wealth through their business. And some of them, how do you put that there? Is that if you're a charity, I don't know how you guys would sort of put that. Would it be philanthropy if you're a charity and you give somebody a donation or a grant or something like that? I sort of find that sort of a little bit odd. Like, I don't know, you can put that in the comments there. If I see them there next week, we can talk about that, of who do you actually think is an actual philanthropist. And I was thinking about that myself, and I'm thinking the only ones that I knew that were sort of a philanthropist probably would be a fictional person, would be Santa Claus, because he never sort of asked for anything in return from anything. He just gave gifts. But that's the whole thing about, like with the apple, right, is that there's always sort of, you're giving something to somebody, but there always feels like with these people that there's some sort of purpose or some sort of future gift back or something, or admiration, or some sort of favor, like, hey, I remember when I gave you this and we helped you out. Now it's your turn to sort of help us, right? So it's sort of like sort of a gift with consequences. So the only one, yeah, that I thought about there would be one of the Santa Clauses, because remember back in before Christmas time, we talked about Santa Claus and the whole part about that and how he was sort of brought into North America and how he sort of was sort of created. Hey, furnace. So if you looked at that, who else would be one there if you thought about, well, I guess he's not really given any money, but he's given sort of a gift or some sort of promote welfare, generous donation of money to good causes. So, yeah, I guess Santa Claus would be out for there, unless he just gave you a check in under the tree, and the Easter Bunny would be out because he just drops off eggs and chocolates. And who else would be on there? That would be somebody that gave money. Well, anyways, if you think of one that you can think about that gave some sort of wealth, money, or something like that, I guess a gift could be money too, in a way, if you were able to resell it some way. If that, but anyways. We'll go on from there. We'll get away from my brain starting to go off different sorts of rabbit holes here about thinking about who gives you gifts that doesn't ask for anything in return. There's always somebody that asks for something in return. So that's where we come into this this top 10 philanthropists of, well, I guess it was back of 2015. And this is philanthropy is giving money while alive too. And that's another sort of thing, because there is people that are going to give money away, give all their wealth away to charities or stuff like that when they're dead. And I think there's one is like this Saudi prince that when he dies, he's going to donate his or give his wealth to somebody or the people. I don't know. And Ted Turner too. I think he's another one that he's going to enjoy it while he has it. And then, well, I guess he already died anyway, so that what he did with that, I don't know. I didn't even check that out. But there's other people, too, that will give out money after they're dead. But those are not the ones on this list. These are the ones. So as of 2015, they had number 10 was Mark Zuckerberg. And if you remember who that person is, he is the creator of Facebook, or one of the creators of Facebook, but he's actually now he's the sole owner of it after all that kerfuffle happened there between the twins, Rich Twins and his buddy there. I guess he paid them all off. And I think if you watch that in, I think it was whatever that movie was, the social something, or the Facebook movie that sort of was the talk about Mark Zuckerberg there. And so what does he do? Well, he's donated so far as of 2015, about $970 million to charity. And he's got this whole interest about bringing the internet to refugee camps. He's part of this new thing called the Giving Pledge. And that was sort of brought to us later on. Well, we'll get to it around with Andrew Carnegie. He sort of had this book called The Gospel of Wealth, and that became the Giving Pledge, and or that fostered into the Giving Pledge. But part of that, and then he's also got this thing where he's gone and donated to the Ebola crisis to help in Africa. And you're going to see something later on here why there seems to be a lot of charities going sort of in one direction. And we'll throw those ingredients in the pot, and we'll see what simmers out of that one there too. But you have this person, Mark Zuckerberg, create tremendous wealth, been in the news quite a bit, and it's all to do with the Facebook and what Facebook is. And this will be, I guess, a part we'll get into later on down the road, maybe an episode or two from now, about what is Facebook. And I'll just skim in there what the conspiracy part in it is, that it is basically it's a social platform where you go and all your information that you want to put on there is there, but a lot of people don't ever read the fine print in your terms of agreement, in terms of service, and what's involved in there. And that's what it has been sort of in the news over the past, since Facebook is actually coming to fruition. And the part of the conspiracy was with it was the CIA was trying to make a program, a social program, which was almost like Facebook, but it wasn't going to be social, where they were going to categorize everybody and have all their information linked to who they were, all their stuff. And it was denied. So whatever the story goes, and Facebook was started on that day, was given the green light. And so a perfect platform for spying on countless people if they wanted to. All your information is gone. And that's the thing that goes into even with Google and the cloud. I'm not sure if I told this story before, but a couple of years ago, I might have said this story on Laura's show, I think about a year ago. I tried to delete all my stuff off of the cloud. And if you have an iPhone, usually you get there is that your storage is full. Do you want to pay for extra storage? Which I always say no to anyways, because why? But I don't want to store anything in there. And so I went in to try and delete everything that I had in the cloud. And I went through, it took about 2 weeks of going through, reading up papers on how to get in there and delete pictures and open up files that were there that had been stored. And I deleted everything that I could out of there. It said it was all wiped out and clear. And I had my 50 gigabytes of storage all free, nice and clear. But what ended up happening was to use apps on my phone, you have to be registered into there. You have to agree to the terms of service, and that puts you back into the cloud again. So after about a month of frustration with not being able to use the full potential of my phone, and knowing what was going to happen when I agreed to this stuff, I finally broke down and I said, okay, I had cleared off my phone, cleared off all my images, pictures, all my music, everything, formatted my phone, started off from scratch with that, started downloading the apps that I wanted to reuse again. And from that, I found when I went into the cloud, everything that I had deleted was already back in there again, files, everything like that. And so all that time, everything to try and delete yourself from the cloud is from my point of view, next to impossible. There's probably some tech people out there that probably would know how to do that or do something. I think you'd have to work at Alphabet or something like that, and to wipe yourself or work for some sort of government agency. Excuse me. To make yourself non-existent on there. But yeah, everything is on there. So with the whole part with the Facebook and even with Twitter and Instagram, all these social programs that are out there, everything is kept and it's stored there. And that's the big thing that I mentioned before in another show there too. I was either on mine or with Laura's there about like with 23andMe and Ancestry.com, all these databases is all this information can be taken, shared, and even if they say that it isn't. And I think the 23andMe was, or Ancestry, one of the two there, I think it was hacked, and all that information is gone. So now they know who you are because you're putting in genealogy stuff, plus also you're putting in, you're giving them your DNA, and they're giving your, so all this stuff goes on to file. Now, that's there for somebody to use, and who's going to use it? Well, usually it would be any type of organization that needed that information, and which could be the FBI, CIA, police, anything. Like they say that they don't use that, but of course they do. And that's, I guess in one way, there's a benefit there to track down serial killers and rapists and stuff like that. But another part's there is that you're giving away all your information for free, and you have all your connections on there. And when you go onto these programs, they do scan your computer, all your banking information, even though they say it isn't taken, it is taken. It's all gone. All your keystrokes, all your passwords, every site that you visit, what your shopping habits are, what your spending habits are, what bills you're paying, anything that you use online nowadays, there is it goes to the cloud or goes to some sort of repository where there's files, and they can just go and pick it up and find who you're connected to, who you're talking to. And then if say yourself or your brother or sister or cousin or something like that, they've done some sort of ancestry stuff, they can all be all matched up together. They can find out your history, your family tree, who you're connected to, how far you go back. Depends on how much you've done in there. Now, even if you haven't done it and somebody has added your name on there, say if a sibling does it and you're against it, well, they've already done it. You're already connected. So it's almost like, process of shared information given without your consent by another party. And that's the whole big problem that has been seeing happening throughout all the parts of people using the internet. And with even with the iPhones there now, I think I was talking to a friend of mine, and the new ones is that they want your fingerprint to open up your phone or your eye print or your facial scan, and to open the phone, or else the other functions to the phone are unavailable to you. And it's just another way to get more information, I feel anyways, on you that's there that they don't need, but they do take, and it's there on file. So that was sort of a short little version there anyways on Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. But anyway, so dealing with him, giving money, hey, it's all great with giving money. And like I said, there is like sometimes like the snake in the Garden of Eden, giving stuff, there's always a price that you end up have to pay at the end, right? So there's always something that's going to happen that I think when someone's giving money and people don't realize, or people do realize this and don't care, or they don't think that it's that important or whatever, but there always come to a time, I think, in somebody's life, there is that, or wondering why did I do that? And who knows, past regrets or something like that. But we'll jump on there. Next person here, Paul Allen. He was number 9 as of 2015. He was the co-founder of Microsoft there with Bill Gates, and he'll also appear on this list later on. And he donates to a music museum and to promote music across, like, I think, a Seattle area there. Supports the arts, science, and technology. And also he fights Ebola. Another one there. So you got Zuckerberg and Paul Allen both do this. And I think that most of all that Ebola stuff is happening over in Africa. I think that's where the biggest problem is with that. But that's to do all the stuff over there. So this giving money to charities. Now, does that fall into philanthropy if you're, well, he's just a single person, I think, out of that. That's using his own wealth to promote arts and music. So it's not actually going to somebody, but it is sort of going to somebody in a way, sort of a roundabout way. But it's donating anyway. So that's the part that I have in there. It says that maybe the word philanthropist is the wrong word. Maybe it should be called a charity giver or something like that. Because in the terms of the word there is to promote the welfare of others, expressed especially by generous donations of money to good causes. Okay, so a good cause, music. If music ends up being a good cause, I guess that's a little bit better than Ebola, I guess, or maybe they're on par. Who knows? But this is just the list that they had there. Another person here, George Kaiser. I don't know what exactly his whole thing was. I think he was investment person. He dealt mostly within Oklahoma, and he deals with the First 5 Years Foundation, dealing with little kids, with dealing with education and welfare of life. And I think there was with the health of them, and also to Jewish schools. Gives grants to kids in the stuff of science, arts, and etc. The next one here, this is one I'm going to talk about too in the weeks coming up, the Walton family. And I think there's 6 of them that are there. I think they're all billionaires, as I believe. And they're the offspring of the two brothers, I believe it was, the Waltons, that created Walmart out of Arkansas. And they have the Walton Family Foundation. Give grants there in the terms of education. And they also have been donating to this, the Crystal Bridges Art Museum. They've given over $1 billion in funding to a museum. Now, see, that comes into the part there now. Is that actually, is that philanthropy by giving money to a museum? That buys art so people can come in and view the art. Now, how is that benefiting anybody financially for good causes? Maybe just well, it's the same as music, I guess. See, that's where this sort of this little tricky part that I'm sort of wrapping around my head around with philanthropy, where it's sort of I guess what I'm sort of looking at it is giving some sort of wealth to benefit somebody's position that was in a lower state that that can benefit them up and maybe move them up a tier class and finances, get them out of the hole, get them off the street, start them off somewhere, give them a job, education. I guess education a way too, but I guess where I'm sort of looking at it that way is that it's a gift to raise yourself from a situation so that you can continue on, and you're not going to be, I guess, in a financial hardship. So that's where here we go, furnace. So that's where I find so art museum, $1 billion to an art museum, and that's philanthropy, as they call it. Another person, number 6, going down the list, Richard Branson. He's given to various charities throughout Africa, another Australia, I believe, and all that sort of area there. Human Rights Foundation, Missing Children's Fund, he's donated to, and to various other causes, various charities he's given to. He's spent his wealth to get his name out there, but also to promote his business. So now, does that work as a philanthropy there if you're donating to create more wealth for yourself? And that's where a lot of these ones you'll sort of see is that people are like, even with Mark Zuckerberg, is bringing computers to people that don't have computers and giving them internet access with Facebook accounts. Now, are you doing that to register and to track more people? So it sort of seems as there an extra little surprise that comes along with that Apple when you're given it. There we go, furnace again. And the next one, I've talked about this one before Christmas time. Number five, George Soros with the Open Society Foundation. He likes to set up foundations in South Africa and other places around the world. And if you want to look back at Open Society Foundation, George Soros, I talked quite a bit about that with his involvement. He's very politically involved in changing social structures in countries that mostly that he does business in too as well, but to cause unrest. And I've said before what certain foundations or certain organizations, social organizations that he's helped fund, like Black Lives Matter, Antifa, different LGBTQ programs, just not just them, but also different things in other countries there to change the sway of government to get people into positions that are more favorable for his business. Now, this is a funny thing I always said about George Soros is one of his quotes, and it's even, you can look this up online, you can listen to the video, is that he said he made all of his money there in financing. And I said where he'd all come from there, from growing up. And then he was during the war, his father faked his name with this other guy that was in there, and he went around and appropriated Jewish households during the Second World War. And he came up with a thing there in his interview. He said, well, if the money's there, that's where I learned, is that the money's there, it's just better that I take it than somebody else take it. So that's why I sort of find that it's sort of weird that him you'd be noted as a philanthropist when he's in the whole process of making money. So by and getting money, so He sets up foundations all over the place, and Obama, before he left office, had given him $9 million to the Open Society Foundation to be doled out by grants by the Soros Foundation. So that's sort of the funny is that he's not really spending his own money. He's getting donations as a charity and then doling them out. So does that work as philanthropy then if you're a foundation that you created and then you dole out money? So is it George Soros that's the philanthropist, or is it the Open Society Foundation that's dealing in philanthropy work or charity work? See, that's that big, huge sort of thing that I have sort of going on there with this whole part of philanthropy and charity. Are they the same thing, or are they two different things? Because I think they're two different things. So, but that's... You can write in a comment there what you figure it is. Another big person, Warren Buffett. Now, he's part of this giving pledge that was come from that book there, The Gospel of Wealth, Andrew Carnegie. That was from a couple of decades ago. He's various charities, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, and when he dies, all the rest of his money goes to Bill and Melinda Gates. So that's you'll see Bill and Melinda Gates here later on there, because they're, I think they topped the list here. So Warren Buffett, yeah, gives out lots of money, generous. If you look up anything about him, is that to his kids, I think it's been known, is that he gives them a comfortable life, but not the riches that he has. I think he was at one time one of the richest men in the world. He was one of the most given out to many, many charities that serve purposes for him making money. So that's, I guess, in a way that sort of, I guess if you looked at theirs, if you're going to go and promote something and give something money, if it benefits you to make you money, that's the best thing. And one of his quotes in the part is that is not one thing is not to spend your own money. So now, is that philanthropy if your business is, I think I've mentioned that before, is that you're not really spending your own money, you're spending your fund's money that has your name on it. So I don't know. Another one, Michael Bloomberg, I believe he was the mayor, became mayor after that 9/11. And his Michael Bloomberg philanthropies charity. And he spent millions and millions of dollars on public health, arts, government initiative, the environment, and education. Another one was the Center for a Progressive America. So that's where he spent a lot of money into other charities and other institutions. So is that philanthropy or is that charity work to charity work, just transferring money to different systems? Now, this other guy, Andrew Carnegie, he's number two. And at the beginning of when the U.S. was in its infancy stages, he made a lot of money building America and going through very rich. And he gave away, I believe it is 90% of his wealth to different charities, organizations, people all across the U.S. as the story sort of goes, and to help build the start of America, to make it prosper. And that's where this whole part came from. The Gospel of Wealth was sort of like a booklet, information about how to spread wealth and to create prosperity, where prosperity is needed so that everybody sort of grows up. And that's where this giving pledge was sort of formed off of, was this part of this booklet. So now we come down to the number one, which was pretty obvious there because they've been all over the news for everything, was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, I think they've given over $130 billion as of 2015 when this part was done there to various charities all over the place there. And they've dealt with a lot of stuff there in Africa with the fresh water, where I think he was also on Jimmy Fallon years ago with giving them some water that was made from septic water, and it was clean, showing like a lot of good works are being done. Don't get me wrong, like they're not all people are evil, but sometimes evil people do good things, and sometimes people do things to benefit themselves. So, and sometimes people just do good things and hope for something later on. So with their foundation, Microsoft, I know he's done there, he's donated lots of computers to schools. And why would you do something like that? Well, you get people that are used to using your product and then they buy your product. So there's sort of that apple with a consequence with it as well. And in a way, if you look at that, if you're a smart business person, I guess in a way that would be sort of a smart thing to do. I think when I was growing up, Apple and Microsoft, both systems I grew up on after the Commodore 64, when they all started to get into it, when they basically took over home computing, Apple was more expensive, but Microsoft was the stuff that we were using in school. We were using DOS, and then I think we had like the Commodore VIC-20 the Commodore 64, and then there was the PET computers, and I think in high school, and then And it went on from there. That we had icons and stuff like that. But then all the home computers all came with DOS. So you learned DOS in school, and then you learned affordable computers at home. Then you learned Windows when that came into fruition back in the 90s, I believe it was. And then all that stuff is so doing things like that. So you promote your company, you get people to buy your product, and you donate it to certain other things. He's also with that. He's been dealing with Ebola vaccinations and Planned Parenthood in Africa. And a lot of these things that I've sort of mentioned with some of these people, there's a lot of stuff is going over to Africa. And that's where a lot of charity stuff with dealing with disease, always with overpopulation, and even with the part with Bill Gates there, he's talked about before there with, I guess we'd talk about eugenics and Planned Parenthood. I think his father was on the Planned Parenthood board in the U.S. And I know there's also been talk with that sort of puts into that part with those Georgia Guidestones, if you're familiar with them, about that there's an overpopulation in the world. And I think there's also been an issue that's been raised in third world countries, or what we consider third world countries would be somewhere, would be South America. It was over in Eurasia area and India, China, but not China really much anymore, and Africa, because they are industrially and technologically a little bit behind where Europe and North America and I guess you'd say Japan, China sort of are. And that was back, we'll say that this is 2015, but even before that and years before, where we were sort of, well, what we were taught in school anyways is that we were first world countries, and those countries were third world countries because they were behind. They didn't have the industry and the technology that that is sort of slowly creeping in there today. And so I was always wondering why this came to this whole question, the second part of this, that is philanthropy, and my mind sort of thinking about this is, why is all this stuff going to Africa? And I said, well, what does Africa have? And right now, when I was looking into it, there is that China is doing a lot of money and infrastructure work in Africa, rail lines, there's mining operations, and a lot of countries have gone into businesses that have gone into Africa. And except for really the states, the only thing that like out of the top 10 businesses that have gone in and are working with Africa, the U.S. isn't even on one of them. The U.S. basically has a military there, and they deal with trade, and they deal with aid, offering food to help out. And I wanted to look into that whole part about what did Africa have? So why is there this interest now? Because it is an undeveloped country. It is behind in its industrialization. And why is China going in there so much? And so I looked at very different stories or different articles and that. And China is a huge population, and their industrialization has moved up to a part where now they're almost to the part where North America is, where your middle class has gone up and wages and cost of living and everything has gone up, and resources are now becoming a little bit more scarce. Like even here where I live in Canada, when I growing up here, we had five lumber mills that were going. We had, I think there was 12 grain elevators. We were the hub, north we were the part of Lake Superior called the Head of the Bay, where all the ship was coming to and being transported out west to the prairies, and prairie stuff coming in here, and then wheat and all the stuff being shipped out through the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway out to the rest of the world. It still is happening there, but not on the scale, excuse me, as what it was before. All of our pulp and paper mills, except for, I believe, one, is still running. Most of all the industry around here has moved away. Even the ones that were outlying outside of Thunder Bay, where I am up at, because I worked at one up in Nakina, which is about 3.5 hours away. That was only open for about 2 years, gone, done. Industry around here slowly moving away. You look at what's happened in the States, their industry moved out because it's too expensive to produce anymore. And it's a lot cheaper to import when you can go and pay workers over in other countries to do the labor at 1/10, 1/20, a fraction of the cost of what it would be in your own industrialized country. And I've sort of made this comment before, and maybe I'll talk about this one again there in future episodes, about this whole part about inflation and technology versus cost of living and way of life, because that's a really funny question about that, because you figure a potato should still cost the same amount of what a potato cost 50 years ago. Potato hasn't changed, and you can produce a hell of a lot more potatoes than you could have at the fraction of the expense. So a potato should actually be less than what it cost before, but with inflation, it's a weird sort of created a market here that's sort of taken over the world, where things become more expensive as technology makes things more easier and faster. That's sort of a real quandary there that I've sort of been working on, but maybe we'll go into that one in a few weeks there. But anyway, so back to this part about Africa. So what is there? So Africa, they have 95% of the world supply of diamonds, and diamonds used for jewelry, also with cutting and drilling, mining stuff. Gold, they have 50% of the world's gold is supposed to be there in Africa. They also have other stuff there too as well, platinum, cobalt, copper, chromium, uranium, and bauxite. And they have oil there, not as big as what is in Venezuela or in the U.S., I believe, and also over in the Middle East, but they do have oil production there. And there's companies in there that are drilling oil and mining oil there, and they're doing it in a country in the I guess you can exploit the cheap labor and you can get this stuff out there. And because the countries are poor, you probably get the oil out of these countries at a song and a dance. So it's basically a way you can sort of like look at it, is that the country is sort of slowly being taken advantage of in a way. And I think that's the part that this thing is with China, is China with their technology, they're in there, and they've made huge infrastructure and spending lots and billions of dollars. They spend, I think, 5 to 6 times more in trade with Africa than the U.S. does. But also they're building huge infrastructure and employing a lot of people, and they're getting their China's products being manufactured in Africa at a lower price, so they don't have to pay for it in China, where now their lower class has moved up to a slow middle class, to their cost of living has sort of gone up. So now you can don't have to pay those workers, and see how this sort of this chain goes down, right? Industry that was done in North America, Europe, has moved out to countries that you can get cheaper labor. And then as those countries become more, a little bit more industrialized, price of labor comes up. And so then you find another country that has the resources you need, and then you can go and create you're seeing products at a lower price. And that's, in a way, it's smart business though, but it's a whole big, huge power dynamic on who is controlling the world. So you have, as we talked about before, we have this new world order, this triangle hierarchy of people, which has been sort of done in the conspiracy stuff about the cabal that's running the world banks and everything like that. And you have this outlier, China, which is also part of the UN. But how they, what is supposed to be how they got in there and how they're getting their global economy and wealth pushed forward, and their agreements through the United Nations is China has spent a lot of money in Africa, and I believe there is 52 UN countries that are on the UN. So when China wants something, because every country gets one vote. Now, if China's spending money in these 52 countries in Africa, they're going to go and vote along with China to give China what it wants, right? So there's a whole give and take to this. The apple that's there has consequences that comes with it. Now, whether this is going to be good for Africa, maybe not. They're going to grow industry, bring industry in there, and maybe progress a little bit more in what we would call Western standards, I guess you would say, or into the sort of the technology, the first world, where stuff, what we have here, I guess you'd say, in North America. So what's going on in Africa with the U.S.? Well, out of the 10 top companies that are there, none of them that I was able to see that were U.S. companies, period. I think what we have here, money being spent as of 2018, the 10 largest companies in Africa: Imperial Holdings, they do logistics and vehicles, $8 billion was spent, or the company's worth $8 billion. Vodacom, Mobile Communications, $9.2 billion. Sanlam, life insurance, $10.12 billion. ShopRite, food retail, $10.14 billion. Eskom, electricity, public utility, $13.7 billion 2018. Bidvest Group, services, trading, and distribution company, $16.5 billion. MTN Group, mobile telecommunications, $17.2 billion. Sasol, energy and chemical, $18.3 billion. Sonangol Group, petroleum and natural gas, $22.2 billion. And Asana Tratch, oil and gas, $58.7 billion. So there's lots of money that's of companies, big companies that are in Africa right now that are doing stuff. Even Russia's in there, along with the UK and China and other, I think Netherlands and stuff like that, Sweden and that are in there. And I believe what was in the news, what was his name there? If I forget it, John Bolton, I guess they had talked with, he made a conference there, and he said that you got U.S. troops in there helping solidify being on a humanitarian mission, and that was to combat terrorism. And over there, because those 52 countries are part of the UN, you have the USA over there, and I think there was at that time in 2017 there was 6,000 to 8,000 troops scattered across 49 countries that the U.S. has over there. I think they're called the U.S. African Initiative, AFRICOM, humanitarian relief, protection, training, and etc. Been labeled as a neocolonialism security blanket. And people over there on some news medias have said that some say a U.S. presence destabilizes areas and promotes civil unrest. That sounds sort of familiar in a way if you've listened to some of the stuff there, what the CIA does in other countries or supposedly does in other countries to destabilize countries, to put people into power, train different outlying groups to take over so that better trade negotiations happen between the USA and that country. And that's what the military is there for, right? So they're in that part where you have other countries like China building infrastructure in there. Now, is that good or bad? Who knows? Is China trying a world domination takeover? That's all part of the conspiracy, right? Who's trying to control all the pieces on the board? So when you look at it, the John Bolton has said to Africa, hey, we're over here, we're helping you out with humanitarian causes, right? So you have these good people, these philanthropists from some of them from North America, dealing with deals over there, helping with sickness, AIDS, clean water initiatives, doing that. But also, they're also making money too as well. Like people like Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and that, they also make money too in foreign interest markets as well, global markets. So they're making money from the countries that are creating, that are mining, doing oil extraction. And because over there you don't have environmental restrictions like you do here in North America, which are very strict, and it's not governed as well over there or in third world countries. And that's why a lot of these other countries come in there, because the restrictions are cheap, labor is cheap, and there is no consequence to environmental impact. Excuse me, what happens over there. So there's lots of different things. So if you're making your money off of the markets, the global market, and then you're using that money to help with what the company that you're making the money from that is polluting the area, as sort of this cyclic way of sort of show that you're helping when you're actually making supporting what's causing the problem. Now, any of this being proven, that's all part of the conspiracy that's there. And that's a lot of news, alternate news and journalists have sort of been looking at, is that what are these people doing that are doing over there? Like even with these vaccines or these shots, like what is in there? Is this a testing ground? That's part of the conspiracy. What is there, like you've seen here also, is even with China, they had this new virus that has just come out there, another SARS type, the coronavirus. And it's just weird that this stuff happens and then transfers over, right? You have things that go on there. I think I've talked about this last week. How do you go and destabilize a country? And I was told the lore about this, about the law of threes, right? 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. So if you want to destabilize a country, you destroy their water, you destroy their air, and then you destroy that they can't produce, and then they have to outsource to get themselves to get what they need to live, right? So could Africa be a testing ground? Could it be that China's coming in there to take over Africa, to build this huge infrastructure, to bring them up so that they have control of a market share in the UN global, the United Nations there, to do what they want to do to expand across the globe? That's an interesting little things to do. What is the U.S. doing over in Africa, hunting for terrorists, when there really isn't any terrorists there? There's just civil unrest and fighting over there. I think the terrorists were supposed to be over in the Middle East, but they do have a huge presence over there. And China also put a military base, I think where the other countries have to, in Djibouti. I think the U.S., France, now China's in there, and a couple others. Anyways, back to what John Bolton said to Africa in one of his speeches there, or reports, is that Africa has to stop doing business with Russia and China if they want America to help out and support. So that was during the Trump administration there, just that's still going on. So it's sort of, hey, if you want something from us, you have to stop playing with those guys. So listening to other things is that, hey, well, China's been nice to us. We'll keep on dealing with them. You guys aren't really doing anything for us, really, in a way. So a weird global politics going along there as the apple is being passed around for anybody to take a bite of it. So you got to sort of wonder, with this whole part of philanthropy, is philanthropy these people that are that I listed in that top 10 list from 2015, is that just philanthropy that they're giving with nothing asking for in return, or is everybody always asking for something? And if you put a report or put a comment down there, if you could think about any philanthropy people that you'd think about, it doesn't have to be billionaires or anything about that, but somebody notable that gives something without asking for anything in return, besides the fictional ones that I thought about, like Santa Claus and Easter Bunny, but they don't really give money. Other than that, I'll have my recipes up there coming up the next few weeks there, and you can check them out, what they are. And I'd like to see you all next week, and thank you all for tuning in.
The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4-for-4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4-for-4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Spring is just around the corner, and now's a great time to get in the driver's seat of that new John Deere you've been dreaming of when you shop with your neighbors at SunSouth. Whether you're cutting, disking, planting, or harvesting, think SunSouth, where you'll find the quality John Deere equipment to meet your needs, affordably priced to save you time and money. Like the fast and efficient John Deere Z915E zero-turn mower as low as $109 a month. And if you need to tackle larger jobs, think SunSouth for the John Deere 3025E package, including tractor, trailer, loader, box blade, and rotary cutter for as low as $285 a month with 0% financing available. Come see how easy it is to own a John Deere when you visit SunSouth. For a full line of affordable John Deere equipment to get your outdoor jobs done faster and more efficiently, think SunSouth for those that do.
Pricing plus taxes and fees. Financing with approved credit. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Expires March 7, 2020.